to the Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back. Hour number two is underway. A reminder that you can subscribe to our podcast and never miss a moment. The Big Show, available wherever you get your podcast: Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. And the hourly podcasts get put up almost moments after we conclude the hour. So you can listen to them on demand and listen to them whenever works for your schedule. My name is Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon. And today, our show a little bit earlier, as we began the program at noon. We're going until 3 p.m. today. And Flames Talk goes from 3 until 6. And that's because the Calgary Hitmen will close out their three-game Saskatchewan road trip in Swift Current tonight. 6 p.m. puck drop with the Broncos and the Hitmen. Brad Curl on the call right here on Sportsnet 960. While we've been talking so much Oilers and Flames in the first hour, Logan, I figured we could kick off hour two with some of the latest news there, as Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was on the ice again today for an optional Oilers skate. We'll keep an eye on his status for tomorrow. Zach Hyman also missed the game last night against the Florida Panthers. And today, the Oilers placing forward Kyle Turris on waivers. And that's a big move for them as they try to shuffle some things. It's also got people wondering if perhaps that signals a nearing signing of Evander Kane, as this is a team that is in need of some sort of change. The team placing Kyle Turris on waivers today. And not to say that the imminent signing is there for Evander Kane, but it does feel like that's ultimately where he ends up. And as I say, this is a team that is in desperate need of a change. I'm not sure, you know, while he's not going to hurt you, he might hurt you inside the locker room, but certainly from an on-ice production standpoint, Evander Kane's not going to hurt you. Where this team needs to make changes is the fact they've got a league-worst .856 save percentage since December 1st, and since their last 15 games going to December 3rd, 2-11-2, worst record in the league, a .200 points percentage, and yeah, the league-worst save percentage, .856. So goaltending and even coaching, maybe those are easier changes, and I think that's the biggest thing for me, and it's not even two guys in Calgary talking about it. Well, it is, but it's not just because it's easy from here. But I just don't understand what they're waiting for. And it just feels like your stubbornness, because you've never fired a coach midseason, I feel like that's playing a role here. And in fact, I do feel like it's hurting, because I'm not saying it would be the answer for everything, but a new coach coming in and getting a bit of a coaching bump, I'm not sure that's the worst thing. And I do wonder what happens tomorrow if they lose to the Flames. And that's, I think, what a lot of people are looking at here. Ryan Rashog at TSN was the first to kind of put it out there on Twitter that he feels that if things don't go well tomorrow against Calgary, it could be the end of the time for Dave Tippett.
Well,
Which is silly, because why are you waiting one more game? Rip the Band-Aid off.
This is sound like a bad pun, but what's the tipping point in all of this? Have we not? Very good, right? It's like the situation with the Lakers. Right, they were talking the other day about their head coach being on a day-to-day or a game-to-game basis. Like, if it's gotten that bad that you can't go more than a 24-hour cycle without evaluating your head coach, then I think time's come. I think that we're at the point where we can honestly say it's enough. Like, if you don't have more than a 24-hour or a game-to-game trust cycle in your coach, then I think, well, then what are you doing here? What are we talking about? And for an Oilers team that, maybe some people disagree with this, Will, but I'm of the opinion that if you have Connor McDavid and you have Leon Draisaitl, it is a go for it every year. There shouldn't be a day where our first round pick is off the table or firing a coach is off the table to get us into the playoffs because I've never let one go. You can't waste these years over and over again and hope that next year will be the solution to it. You've got to do what's best in the here and now. And right now, this is a team that's not responding to their coach, that's not filling in on those fundamentals. I mean, okay, you had a good first period, but the other 40 minutes you guys just deflated. Like, that's not acceptable at this point when you've won two games in the last 2 months. Something has to change. We just talked to Tyler last segment there, and, you know, whether you want to blame Ken Holland for this or not, they're in a very difficult position to make a move when it comes to player movement. What other choice do you have? I don't think Dave Tippett is keeping them, is the difference between them being a Stanley Cup contender and missing the playoffs at this point, Will. So what are we doing on this back and forth, waiting to see if Saturday is the decision? Like, I mean, couldn't we have made this decision 3 weeks ago if you were really being honest with yourselves in Edmonton? And even then, you hang on to for the rest of the season. Why? So you can maintain your record that you won't let go of guys in the middle of seasons because you've never done it before? Well, this isn't Detroit anymore, Ken. This is something completely different, and you need to do what's best for your organization in the here and now.
So wait and see, and even if they lose tomorrow, if they do lose tomorrow, I'm not even a guarantee that there is going to be a change behind the bench. It seems like absolute last resort for Ken Holland, because I don't know what he's waiting for at this point. 2-11-2. I know that goaltending has been the obvious one. I mean, when you've got a save percentage of .856 over a 15-game span, I think almost every team in the league, including the most skilled in Tampa or Florida, you know, those are the teams that I think would still have trouble winning games. You might win three or four, but you're probably not winning many more than that in a 15-game stretch. When you're not getting saves, or you're getting them at that little of a rate, you're probably not setting yourself up for very much success. 960-960 is the fan feedback line. It's always wide open to you. This says, how many coaches have been there since McDavid? Quite a few. And I think the one telling sign is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. I believe he'll be going into coach number 9 if the Oilers were to make a change. And that is quite a bit when you consider that this is, what, his 11th season or 10th season in Edmonton, going back to 11-12. 9 or 10 coaches for Nugent-Hopkins. And, certainly has been a lot for McDavid. And I don't think, as I said before, coaching has not been the only issue. Just right now, when that's the easy fix, like for me, Logan, it's easier to make a coaching change than trade for a goalie, even though goaltending might be the deeper problem. I believe you're probably looking at it and saying, okay, what's easy for me and what's easy is making the change behind the bench.
100%. And yes, maybe the GM handcuffed himself in that scenario and made it easier for himself to have to fire the coach than making a trade, but that's the world that he lives in, and that's the decision he has to make now. And you can sit there and go through all the options. None of them make sense as a team that's extremely cap-strapped when it comes to available money. If they want to bring anybody in that's an improvement over what they have, and he doesn't want to make any sort of, you know, future play when it comes to first-round picks to have to pay up for that. Sometimes the coach is the easy solution, Will, and it's the lazy solution. I just don't think there's another option here. Like, what else are you going to do? Even you talk about Braden Holtby or any of the other guys that you come up, you don't have room for that. You just simply don't have the room for that unless you're paying a team a first-round pick to take Mikko Koskinen off of your hands, and that might not even be enough to get him off of your plate at this point. So what else are you going to do? I think firing the coach, as much as it might not be entirely his fault, like you say, is the easiest and quickest way for you to maybe see some substantial change in your team before it's too late.
And yes, it would be coach number 9 for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins in Edmonton. Had 3 in 1 year, Logan.
Yes, he did. That's right. Holy, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Had the 3 in 1 season. Dallas Eakin started the year. McTavish only 5 games, so you can count that for what it is. And then Todd Nelson finished off the year. And for McDavid, it's not as bad as you might think. Of course, had Todd McClellan the first 3 years and into year 4 before McClellan was fired. And Ken Hitchcock took over the rest of the season. And the last 3 years have been with Dave Tippett. So this would only be coach number 4 for McDavid. And he's now in his 7th season. So not as bad as the Ryan Nugent-Hopkins situation, but it does feel like that is the easy move. And we'll see what tomorrow brings and if that changes where things are at. 960-960. Oilers have been playing the Flames last night. Oilers win 5-2. Oilers win tomorrow. Heard it here first. Tippett, it looked like he had given up last night, so defeated. I agree Tippett should go, but how many playoff runs have the Oilers gone on since McDavid has been an Oiler? Bigger problem than the coach. Hey, as we've just talked about, I'm not sure that the coach is even a guy that, you know, is should be even holding 50% of the blame. I think he's been a part of it. I think if you're looking at a pie chart, Logan, he's probably 30 to 40 to maybe 50%, but a lot of it has been goaltending and then depth behind your top two guys. I mean, Lou talked about the Pittsburgh way and what they've been able to do. And at the same time, I'm not absolving McDavid and Draisaitl of blame. They've got to be in a spot where they can make those around them better, right?
Oh, 100%. It's more than one problem. And that's why this whole conversation is so interesting because, you know, are we saying fire the coach? Is that sort of the direction we're going right now and maybe surprise that right now? Yeah, but there's so much more than that. And this is just talking about how can you fix things now? How can you maybe look to shock this team back into playing a better, more all-around game? And that's the solution that a lot of people have come to. But that is, you know, far and away their only problem. I mean, the drop-off in depth on this team when it comes to point scoring, the league worst goaltending in some categories is all a problem, and it's not on one person. Somebody might lose their job because of it, but it's not on Dave Tippett if he loses his job that this is the reason it didn't work.
And then lastly on the Oilers, we'll move on to a couple of different things. This one says Zach Hyman trade to open up cap space and grab Fleury maybe out of Chicago. And for me, that's fantasy land. You just signed Zach Hyman to a deal. You're not trading him. And also Marc-Andre Fleury is not coming to Edmonton. So there's
I don't think that's going to happen.
And Zach Hyman's been one of the bright spots for the Oilers this year.
Yeah, Zach
Hyman
also
love the contract, but
no move clause.
Pretty good. And for a team that needs depth, I wouldn't be depleting my forward group to go and get Marc-Andre Fleury, who might be there for 2 months.
No move clause on Hyman until the end of his deal as well.
So why on earth would he waive after he just signed there? And that's not... The only team that trades players after they sign them is Vegas. And not Vegas.
No.
We'll see what happens tomorrow night. Looking forward to it. 8 p.m. puck drop. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. You can also watch it Sportsnet and CBC on television. As it's been a while. It feels like it's been hit and miss. I shouldn't say it's been a while. It's been a while for the Flames. But been hit and miss on Hockey Night in Canada. A doubleheader this weekend. And we're kind of in that phase. Cross your fingers that we're not getting games postponed. And hopefully less of that as we go forward and into the heavy final 3 months of the regular season. 8 p.m. Hockey Night in Canada. Flames, Oilers tomorrow from Edmonton. The Oilers come in 2-11-2 in their past 15. Calgary at 3-7-1 in their past 11 games. Logan, we've been waiting kind of all week for it. We talked yesterday about Adam Big Hill re-upping in Winnipeg. And today, the Blue Bombers making Zach Collaros the most expensive player in the CFL, the highest paid player in the CFL, as the quarterback is back and he's back in Winnipeg. He's won the last two Grey Cups. And if you're his agent, you probably said, make me the highest paid player. And as the team, you probably couldn't have said anything else. He's the reigning MOP and he's a two-time Grey Cup champion. I think the Bombers made the right decision here. Trevor Harrison, free agency, wasn't going to move the needle the same way. You're probably making your team worse. So, we all knew this was coming, but late yesterday got the news officially that Zach Collaros is back in Winnipeg with an extension in hand.
This one almost made too much sense to get done from my point of view. I wasn't surprised to see the news yesterday. I wasn't surprised when we heard that he was going to be the highest paid player. But Zach Collaros, and I don't know if you agree, Will, or not, but I always thought Zach Collaros was a good, capable CFL quarterback. He's always, I think he's always been that, whether it was time in Toronto or Hamilton or, you know, even that 14-game stretch and a bit in Sask. I thought he was a good quarterback. I never thought he was great, but he's found something in Winnipeg that's let him be great. And whether that's the collection of talent around him or the coaching staff around him, they've come together and form something really good. It's led to two straight Grey Cup titles. And if I was Zach Collaros, I wouldn't want to go anywhere else. A, because you've been other places and it hasn't been as successful. And if I'm Winnipeg, I'll pay what it takes to keep a guy around who's been able to come in and lead us to two straight Grey Cups. Yes, pandemic in the middle of that, and he's not the only reason, but he certainly helped get you over the top in two straight years. This just made too much sense. I don't think that for all the talk about, you know, free agency coming up and why wasn't this deal done before, I never got worried about Zach Collaros going anywhere. If I had looked out of the quarterback market, I wouldn't have said that Winnipeg would have been overly swayed for Trevor Harris or Jeremiah Masoli or whoever it was, because this has been such a picture-perfect fit since he came in late in 2019 and has just performed up to every level. And when that happens, you get paid, and you deserve to get paid after two straight Grey Cup titles in Winnipeg. And if you're Zach, why go anywhere else? It's been perfect since you've got to Winnipeg.
So Zach Collaros is back with the Bombers. That news coming yesterday afternoon out of Winnipeg. And meanwhile, in the NFL, we felt like it was trending this way for quite some time, Logo, but the Tennessee Titans expected to activate and then start Derrick Henry at running back against Cincinnati tomorrow. So south of the border, as we focus in on the final eight teams in the NFL, we felt like it was going this way. We still don't know exactly what he's going to do in terms of how many carries he'll have, how involved he's going to be in the game plan. Is he more of a decoy than an actual, you know, 25 to 30 carry bell cow? We'll wait and see tomorrow. But Derrick Henry officially on his way to being back and playing for Tennessee tomorrow.
I said it yesterday, and I think it's almost as accurate as it can be, depending on his workload, like you just mentioned. Kind of feels like Nikita Kucherov coming back just in time for a playoff run here for the Tampa Bay Lightning is kind of how I like in this Derrick Henry situation. I think that based on everything you've heard, it's been close to full practices. He's feeling good. I think he's going to have a substantial workload, and I think that changes things entirely when you talk about the AFC and you talk about what the Tennessee Titans are as that number one seed heading into this weekend against the Cincinnati Bengals. Will, this guy changes the Titans offense. He is the most elite running back left out of these eight teams, and I don't think it can be understated, even if, say, he's at 80 or 90%, what his presence is going to be, because I don't think after all this time off that he's simply being run out there as a decoy and that Dante Foreman is going to, you know, dominate the carries, you know, 15 to 20. I think Derrick Henry is coming back with the intent of being running back number one. And we've seen what happens when he is that guy. It changes the Titans. It changes how teams have to play them. And I think it'll change what we've talked about a lot this week. And that's sort of been, I don't want to call it disrespect towards the Tennessee Titans, but maybe an overlooking of the Tennessee Titans without Derrick Henry. Now that he's back in the fold, I think that it's going to be a much more interesting conversation about where this can go in this game against Cincinnati.
So that will kick off divisional weekend in the NFL. 2:30 kickoff, by the way, for Tennessee and Cincinnati tomorrow. We'll have more on the NFL and our picks and some picks coming up in the next segment, courtesy of Jordan Tamayama. Did want to pass this along, though. We don't talk a ton of tennis on this program, but of course the Australian Open is underway, and if you're a late night owl, this is Steinberg's tournament, Logan, because it does go well into the evening. And going on to the fourth round, another victory yesterday for Denis Shapovalov. He's off to the fourth round after defeating Riley Opelka of the United States 7-6, 6-4, or 4-6, sorry, 6-3, 6-4. So four sets it took for Shapovalov. He is off to the fourth round. It'll be played tomorrow. Time is yet to be determined. And it's been a fun little run here for Shapovalov as he continues to climb his way up the world rankings. Of course, he, along with Felix Auger-Aliassime, are, you know, the guys that we in this country cheer for. And I hope that we're seeing this guy, you know, make it break through and get to a quarterfinal stage or get to a semifinal stage. And if you're up late tonight, by the way, 11 o'clock Mountain Time, Felix Auger-Aliassime will look to join Shapovalov in the fourth round. So as I say, if you're a late night owl, tonight's Friday, so maybe you got nothing else going on tomorrow, but Auger-Aliassime will take the court at 11 p.m. Calgary time tonight.
I really hope that we get Felix along with Dennis, because look, is it an understatement to say it's good for Canadian tennis? Yeah, it is. That's obviously important, but I love seeing these guys come up together. And, you know, thinking about Shapovalov at just 22 years old and continuing to climb and go through these major tournaments. And I remember that they, you know, won the ATP Cup together earlier this month in Australia. Mm-hmm. To see both of those guys now in singles tournaments having that same level of success, for me, it's just cool as a Canadian sports fan. And I know Lou will appreciate that sort of aspect to it, because it's a 23-year-old kid, and we've had great moments with different Canadian tennis stars in short periods of time, but you want to see these guys continue to have this level of success. And Dennis and Felix seem like the kind of duo that can go ahead and do that for Canadian tennis for the next 10-15 years, because I count myself as one of the people, Will, that sits there and goes, when you lose, oh, you know, I'm so disappointed. But then I sit there and I go, how can we be disappointed? This is a 22-year-old kid, and think about the impact he's already had, you know, by going this far in these sort of tournaments and going to the round of 16 at the Aussie Open at that sort of age. Even if he doesn't win these things, it's still a huge accomplishment. And I think he's got every chance of winning these things and winning and being in those conversations for the next 5-10 years. So I catch myself having to remember where we are as a tennis nation and as a group going forward, because these young stars are the ones leading us, and there's still so much to come from them.
Well, and that's just it. I think the one thing that's hard is we always want to see them win now, and to see them have the amount of success they've had already is awesome. But I think this has been said by a lot of people, certainly by tennis diehards, and you still got to win it. Nobody's going to hand it to you. But, you know, you look at potentially the next half decade in tennis, certainly the next decade, with the likes of Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer getting older and or retiring, all of a sudden the sky's the limit. And if you can get more experience and get deeper in these tournaments while those guys are still playing, I think it's going to be, you know, only massively beneficial for them going forward. So awesome to see. And yes, let's see if Felix can join Denis Shapovalov in the fourth round of the Australian Open. Of course, he was the ninth seed going into this tournament. So in a pretty good spot, and certainly is the favorite tonight, but we'll see if he can punch his ticket to the fourth round of the Australian Open. Again, he will hit the court approximately at 11 p.m. Calgary time this evening. He is Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nault. We are live today and every day in the iconic Electric and Controls downtown and home studio, where they treat every employee like family, an iconic family. Apply to join the team at iconicec.ca/careers. Our next guest has some explaining to do, Jordan Tamayama, with some of your best bets for the weekend and a look at the NBA slate tonight. All that and more as we continue on Hour 2, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Hour 2 continues. We're live in the iconic Electric and Controls downtown and home studio. Reminder, coming up at 6 p.m. tonight, the Calgary Hitmen close out their Saskatchewan road trip in Swift Current. Broncos and Hitmen at 6 p.m. with Brad Curl here on Sportsnet 960. And as a result, we've moved up the big show from 12 until 3. And 3 until 6 is Flames Talk this afternoon with Pat Steinberg and Matt Rose. They will set the scene and get you set for round 2 of the Battle of Alberta tomorrow. The Calgary Flames did not practice today, but they held an off-ice workout at 1 p.m. and some media to follow, so should be getting some fresh audio and thoughts from the Calgary Flames as they get set for the Oilers tomorrow. As for the Oilers, it was another tough night last night, 6-0. They were on the losing end of the Florida Panthers, and was not a pretty evening once again in goal, as Mikko Koskinen allowing 6 goals on the 28 shots. That is good enough for a 786 save percentage. The Oilers have a league worst 856 save percentage in the last 15 games, where they hold the league's worst record at 2-11-2. My name is Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon. Time to go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline and welcome in our next guest. Come on in and enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast. Pickup and delivery also available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344. That'll be a good place to go this weekend. Saturday, of course, you got the two games in the NFL. Then you've got the nightcap with the Flames and the Oilers. And Sunday is shaping up to be a great football day with a doubleheader that is a doozy. The Rams and the Buccaneers kicking off at 1, and at 4:30, it's the Chiefs and the Bills for a rematch of last year's AFC title game. Talk about that and more on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline is, you know him better as Jordan the Web Guy. He is Jordan Tamayama, our pal, our buddy. And last week introduced him as a betting expert. I'm not going to do that this week because Tamayama, a text came in the commercial break. You've got some explaining to do, and you've really got to redeem yourself here. This might be a 2-week stint on the program if you can't get back in the win column. What happened last weekend, sir?
Lots of bad stuff happened. that's all I can say. Basketball picks weren't good. NFL picks were horrible. But no, there's always another week, as they say, and it's time to bounce back. So I hope these picks are better. But yeah, last week was a wake up call.
Yeah, this week, fortunately for you, they're not playing, so you can't throw blind faith into Bill Belichick. So that'll be good for you. You know, we'll kick things off and we'll wrap up with the NFL. But first off, while we have you, of course, last weekend when we talked to you, or last Friday, I should say, we talked about your big win with the Wisewood Warriors, and I'm not sure if you're coming off a victory last night and into today, but just on the Raptors and in basketball, which is your wheelhouse, what are you seeing with the Raptors right now? They had that pretty hot stretch, and lately, in the last week, I think it has been kind of win-loss. What's going on with the Raps right now, Jordan?
I think they're kind of coming into their own, but the one big concern right now, I think, for everyone is like their rotation. They're only playing seven guys. So I'm not sure if that's a message Nick Nurse is sending maybe front office or to the players. But, yeah, they're only playing seven guys. And you can tell at the end of games that Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, they just don't have a lot of energy left to go. And they kind of lose those games by one or two. But I think they're in a weird spot that when they win big games, it's awesome. But when they lose, like, those tight games against – like the Suns or Mavericks, it's not as heartbreaking, or it's like, oh, it's a learning tool. Like, I don't think the fans are taking losses as hard, but when they do get a big one, it's like you can kind of finally see that Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, they've kind of figured out their roles, and it's been much better than the beginning of the year. And I think the key part is Pascal Siakam kind of finding his rhythm and not realizing, like, he doesn't have to score 40 a game, but he needs to be in that 20-25, and then Fred VanVleet will help them. So I think they're just kind of finding their groove, but they need help. They need at least one or two rotation players. But I think in general, they're in a much better place than they were like a couple weeks ago or a month ago.
Good. You led me nicely into the next question, because that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, you talked to a lot of people around this Raptor team, and it's kind of similar to last year, but not really. I think they're in a little bit better shape. And they don't have that looming, you know, gray cloud about the future of a star player like Kyle Lowry. But, you know, as they get into the second half of the year here, and as we get closer to the trade deadline, like, what's your thought? You mentioned a potential message from Nick Nurse to front office. They are only using, you know, limited people in terms of what is available to them on their bench. What do the Raptors do, and what would you do if you were Bobby Webster and that management group?
Yeah, I think they need to add a piece or two. They'll probably end up dealing Dragic or buying him out, but they're a playoff team, or at least a play-in game team, so I don't think they're going to be tanking or anything like that. I'm not sure, like, who they can really add. There's no really big, like, free agent next year that they can trade for. Bradley Beal doesn't have a contract, but they'd have to give up a lot. I think they have really good building, like a foundation right now. So if they could add someone like another shooter, or they just need some depth. But maybe if they can get some in the buyout market. But I think they're a playoff team, so they're not going to be selling assets. I know Gary Trent was maybe in the trade rumor, but he's pretty key to their success, and he's on a pretty good deal. So I think in general they just need to add a couple more pieces and just give their rotation some help, because if they do that, I think they can be a pretty dangerous team. I don't think they're a title contender, but I think they could win a round, or they'll at least win the play-in tournament. But I like that they're a playoff team, and I think they do have a lot of potential, and they're a really young team too, which doesn't hurt.
The one that I heard this week that kind of, you know, made me stop and think, like, where are you on a potential reunion with Terrence Ross?
Yeah, I think like that, like, he doesn't really fit that mold that Nick Nurse obviously has. Like, if, in his ideal world, he'd have five OGs or five Scotty Barnes, but he can shoot. And if you can shoot and play a little bit of defense, Nick Nurse will like you. But I think that'd be pretty cool to have him come back. He's on that terrible team in Orlando, so if he can get freed from there, I think he'd be a pretty good fit for Toronto.
He is Jordan Tamayama. He joins us every Friday for some NBA and Raptors thoughts, also his best bets, which we'll get to in a moment. But before we get there, we've got the latest update yesterday, I believe it was, and Van Vliet and Siakam continue to climb. Are we going to see both Raptors at the All-Star weekend?
I think the only one who will be there is Fred Van Vliet. I think Pascal Siakam kind of slow start to the season may have hurt him a bit, but I think in the East, I think it's going to be Van Vliet. He definitely deserves it. He's playing a ton of minutes, and he's the only reason they're kind of on the right track right now. So I'd like to see Van Vliet in Cleveland.
Well, and then just a thought on Van Vliet's season as a whole. I saw, you know, per advanced stats, the maybe loose consideration for the MVP. I think we all know he won't end up being in that conversation, but that's the kind of year he's having, and that's how valuable he is to the team. Is he, you know, a lot of people calling him the direct replacement for Kyle Lowry. Is he filling those shoes nicely in your eyes?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And especially, like, offensively, he can be dominant. But I think on the defensive end, he's pretty good at guarding when he gets posted up, and he's not a deficiency when he's on the defensive end. So the way that he can control a game is pretty insane. And similar to Kyle Lowry, when the Raptors needed a bucket or they needed someone to go on a run, they looked for Kyle Lowry, and I think they're looking at Fred VanVleet now. And I think that's really helped Pascal, because even in the offseason, he said he didn't know if he was the man or whatever. But I think he knows now that Fred's kind of the guy. So I think it's allowed him to fall into a new role. But Fred's just been amazing. He's pretty much carried this team, and I don't want to think about where they'd be without him this year. But he's their MVP, and I think the way he stepped up has helped everyone. So, yeah, he's an integral part of that team for sure.
Last one before we get to your best bets, which do include the Raptors. You know, Pascal Siakam, you mentioned it there, maybe less pressure because Van Vliet's kind of viewed as the guy. But, you know, all the talk in the offseason, I think you're feeling pretty good if you're a Raptor fan or if you're Nick Nurse. The team ultimately didn't end up trading Pascal Siakam.
Yeah, like, I know he was maybe in the Ben Simmons rumors or just to be dealt, but he did get that big contract, so people are expecting big things. But I think you see what he can do now. Like, he's a 20-point game guy, rebounds, distributes, and the way he's found his role has really helped everyone else, because it allows OG to be open, Scotty Barnes when he's healthy. I think the way that when he can shoot the three and then he's still attacking and not forcing everything, it really allows the Raptors to put out some really awesome lineups. And I think he can be like a star in this league. I'm not sure if he's like that Supermax MVP type guy, but he's a big part of this team. And yeah, I'm pretty sure everyone's glad they kept him.
Staying with the NBA, let's get to your picks tonight. You got a couple on the money line with a little parlay here. The LA Lakers and Denver Nuggets, two teams that are kind of desperate, obviously one more desperate than the other, but Lakers and Nuggets on the money line tonight, Jordan.
Yeah, I'm going Lakers. They need this win badly, more so maybe Frank Vogel needs the win, but they're playing a really bad team in Orlando. They got less than 10 wins, and just talent in these types of games takes over, and I'll be Westbrook and LeBron. So I like them on the money line. And then I'm going with the Nuggets as well. That's around a plus 139, I believe. So if you bet 25, you win about 40. But, yeah, the Grizzlies, they're without multiple starters and rotation guys due to COVID or injury. And the Nuggets have Jokic, who's playing at an MVP level, and he dropped 49 points last game. So I like those two on the money line combined.
And then, as you self-admit, maybe a bit of a homer pick, but back to the Raptors. They're taking on the Wizards, and you like the Raptors' money line.
Yeah, it's pretty much even money. So if you bet 25, you win 25. They match up pretty well with the Wizards. The Wizards have Harrell, which might be tough because he's a big man. But I just think with OG, Pascal, and then I think Gary Trent might be back for this game. I think it'll be a really fun game. And the Raptors and Wizards always have good games. So I really like the Raptors just on the money line.
He is Jordan Tamiyama. Those are his best bets in the NBA. He's got the Nuggets and the Lakers on the money line, as well as the Toronto Raptors, as those are his picks in the NBA. As we transition into the NFL, this is where you need to redeem yourself, my friend. And let's start in chronological order. You've got the Bengals on the road, plus 3.5. The return of Derrick Henry is not scaring you, apparently.
No, I think that the Bengals offense with Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, I think they'll be able to pick apart that secondary. The Bengals, they've won 4 of the last 5 games, and they've covered in 4 straight games. Joe Burrow, he's turned into a superstar, and I think he'll be able to pick apart that defense, especially with the wideout talents he has. The Titans, they're 3-5 against the spread in the last 8 games, and the Bengals are 5-3. And then 3 of the Bengals' last 5 games have been tied by 3 or less. So Derrick Henry is a little scary, but he hasn't played football in a while, so I'm not sure how many snaps he'll get, but I think 3.5 is too much for the Titans to cover, so I'll pick the Bengals.
If it was 2.5, would you be scared?
I don't have to think about that. So, but yeah, 2.5 would be a little scary.
The Saturday night game has got the Green Bay Packers at home to the San Francisco 49ers. Both number one seeds will be in action on Saturday. And you've got the Niners to cover in this game, Jordan.
Yeah, I really love their run game. I think Shanahan knows that he's not going to be able to have a shootout against Aaron Rodgers. So they'll control the game with their running. I know Jimmy G is banged up, so you'll see a ton of Deebo Samuel and Elijah Mitchell. Deebo Samuel, I think, is probably that next superstar-type player in this league. The Niners covered the spread in 3 straight games, and the Packers haven't covered in 3 of the last 4. And Kyle Shanahan is 1-0 against Matt Flair when they crushed them 2 years ago. But I think if the game is on the ground, then I like the Niners and Kyle Shanahan's game plan, especially if they run it a lot.
Finish off with Sunday. You are on the road dogs here a ton in your NFL weekend. You've got the Rams to cover on the road in Tampa against Tom Brady and the Bucks.
Yeah, the Rams, obviously, they're coming off a dominant win. I guess the Bucks are too, but the Buccaneers O-line, it's pretty banged up with 2 starters that are questionable for Sunday. I think they'll be chasing Brady all over the field, and I just think that OBJ has kind of found his role on that team. And if it is a shootout, I like that they have Cooper Kupp, OBJ, and Akers is back from his ACL injury. So I think just with that potent of offense, that they'll be able to keep up with Brady and the Bucks. And the Rams are 7-2 on the road. I never liked betting against Tom Brady, but if it was only money line, I'd probably take Brady. But plus 3 and that Rams offense, I'll go with Los Angeles.
And then the final game of the weekend is maybe one where a lot of people are having issues with, and I see that you also are one of those people potentially having issues with this game. You've got the Chiefs to cover, but you've also got another avenue that you might be more comfortable in this game.
Yeah, I think just from what, like, obviously Josh Allen had one of the best quarterback games in the playoffs ever, but I just think with that Kansas City Chiefs offense and how they kind of started the season slow, but now you saw against Pittsburgh, when they get going, it's really hard to stop them. So I'll take that 2 points, and the over is 54. So these two offenses are really tough to stop. The Chiefs, they've scored 28 points in 6 straight games, and then the Bills offense scored 27 in 6 straight games. So I think it'll be a shootout. it'll be probably like one of the best games of the weekend. So either Keith at -2 or I'll take the over 54.
He is Jordan Tamayama. He joins us every Friday for his best bets. And this weekend, he's got to, on the NBA side of things, Lakers money line and Nuggets money line with a little bit of a parlay there. Also, the Raptors money line taking on the Wizards. And in the NFL, he's got a lot of road favorites and dogs in this game or this weekend. Bengals +3.5, Niners +5.5 or +6, depending where you get it. And the Rams +3. He's also got the Chiefs at -2 or is comfortable in a shootout with the over at 54. Jordan, good luck to you this weekend. Let's hope you've won our listeners some money. And if you have, we'll bring you back next Friday. Appreciate it, pal.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
There he is, Jordan Tamayama, every Friday on The Big Show with his best bets. He needs a bounce back weekend, and we'll see if he can do just that. My name is Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon. Logan, before we hit the break, headlines, by the way, coming up at the top of the hour for the final hour. We've got headlines and a visit with Jason Lacken for our NFL Insider with CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. I figured we could piggyback off Tamayama. I'm not sure if you're going to go down the same road that he did with all of these games, but I figured, you know, we could take our best bets or our best shot at bets for this weekend, because you and I coming off a pretty good wild card weekend. I foolishly decided that the Steelers would cover, and that wrecked me and didn't allow me to go 5-1 on the weekend. You and I both entered the divisional weekend at 4-2, and we will also start with the Tennessee Titans and the Bengals. Sports Interaction, the Titans are favored by 3.5. Logan, where are you going in our first divisional matchup this weekend?
I am going to take those Tennessee Titans and the -3.5 there at home. Coming off a week's rest, Derrick Henry back in the fold. I'm a little bit more confident than our pal Jordan is that Derrick Henry is going to have a significant role in this. And I think that that changes how I look at this. The less time that Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase are out on that field, the more I like the chances for this Tennessee Titans defense to be able to hold them down a bit. Time of possession is going to be a big one in this one. I'm going to take the Titans at home, the number one seed, moving on in my books.
Yeah, I'm going to lean the same way. I'd like to be different than you just for the sake of the show, but I just can't ignore the fact that the Tennessee Titans are the number one seed for a reason. Their defense is able to have that full bye week. They're getting rested. They're ready to go. The Bengals offensive line, specifically on the right side, I do think they're going to struggle a bit with the pass rush in Tennessee. Yes, their DBs are not the best in the league. In fact, against the pass, they rank 30th, 31st, or 32nd. And Ja'Marr Chase against that defensive backfield, it's a very scary matchup, but I like what you said about Derrick Henry, and I'm going to put the faith in him that he is healthy despite not playing since week 8 with a broken foot. I think Derrick Henry is going to be ready to go. I think he is going to lead the Titans to victory, and I do see them winning by more than a field goal, so I will take the Titans -3.5. As for the Saturday night game, Green Bay Packers, the NFC's number one seed, against the San Francisco 49ers. That is a spread of 6 points. At sportsinteraction.com. I'm going to take the Green Bay Packers -6. I think they've gotten a lot of guys back, and I think the bye week, much like it did for the Tennessee Titans, I think it's super beneficial for the Packers to get some of the players they've gotten back, in particular Jair Alexander, the defensive backfield, Za'Darius Smith at linebacker, David Bakhtiari, the left tackle, played in week 18. He's questionable for this game, but I do think he will go. I wouldn't bet my house on it that he'll go, but I do think he will play. He's going to test it in pregame warm-up. So all that considered, Randall Cobb is back. He was talking big today. He's not the Randall Cobb of old, but still a guy that I think can contribute. And, of course, you've got the connection of Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers. And in the cold weather, the run game is going to be a big factor. I do like what the Niners can do with Deebo Samuel and Elijah Mitchell, but I also think that A.J. Dillon and big A.J. Dillon with those legs is going to run over some people and can be able to help the Packers control the clock. So I'm going to bet on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers at -6.
I'm going to go the other way when it comes to picks on this one. I will take the 49ers on the plus six. I think Green Bay wins this game, Will, but with Nick Bosa being a full participant in practice, I think that that defense for San Fran's going to be able to keep this one close enough that I feel comfortable on the biggest spread of the weekend that the 49ers can stay there. I think they've got enough offensively with Kittle and Deebo Samuel to make this one interesting. Like I said, I don't think they're going to win the game, but I think at least with Bosa and Warner there, they have a chance of slowing down Aaron Rodgers and company enough that I can get within that 6 points. So I'll go 49ers plus six, but I think the Packers are winning the game.
What about on Sunday? The doubleheader begins at 1 o'clock Calgary time. First up, the LA Rams in Tampa taking on the defending champion Buccaneers. The Rams are the 2.5 underdogs at sportsinteraction.com. Where are you leaning in the Sunday afternoon early game between the Bucs and the Rams?
I'm going to go Bucs minus 2.5. I have bet against Tom Brady one too many times. I'm not going to do it this time. I won't be fooled by it. If he loses and I'm wrong, then so be it. But I've been on the other side of this too many times. I appreciate what the Rams do. I think they're going to try to make life hell for him with, you know, Von Miller and Aaron Donald. But I think Tom Brady's seen this before. I think he's got knowledge on how to beat that sort of quick rush attack. I don't like the Rams having to go across country either all that much. And I think that this is probably one of the stiffer defensive tests that Sean McVay's group is going to have to play against. And it just that when it comes down to playoff time, who do I have more trust in, Tom Brady or Matt Stafford? It's Tom Brady.
I'm going to be on the other side of it. I think the Buccaneers' injuries are playing a role here. I think Tristan Wirfs being beat up is a bigger factor than many people are giving it credit for, especially when you consider who is on that Rams defensive line and that defensive front led by Von Miller and Aaron Donald. And I do think just the way that they played last week, I love what the Rams are doing right now. The cross-country travel does concern me a little bit, but I think it's time that the Rams dethrone the Bucs, and I think their run at back-to-back championships will come to an end on Sunday. So I not only think the Rams will cover, I think the Rams win. I'll take the Rams plus 2.5 in the Sunday 1 o'clock kickoff from Tampa. 4:30 kickoff in Kansas City. The Chiefs at home to the Buffalo Bills, a rematch of last year's AFC title game. I'm going to take the Bills plus 1.5. I think it's time the Buffalo Bills break through and go to the AFC title game for the second consecutive year. Finally beat the Chiefs, what has been kind of their kryptonite here. And I think it's Josh Allen and that crew's time. So as good as the Chiefs are, and as automatic it feels like Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes have been since they've gotten together in the playoffs, I'm going to take the road guys here. I'm going to go Buffalo plus 1.5.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to go opposite. I'm going to go Chiefs minus 1.5. It was a slow start against Pittsburgh, but it looked more like that Chiefs offense that we've seen, which scares me a bit when you've got Mahomes at 400 yards passing and 5 touchdowns. I actually like what Jerick McKinnon brought to that running game. He seemed to be more effective than Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Darrell Williams have been at times this season. I don't know if the Bills can slow them down enough to keep up in this one. I think it could be the game of the weekend, Will, and I'm very curious. I would love to see the storyline of Buffalo finally getting over that. We've talked about that so much this week, and I'm so curious to see if it actually happens on Sunday. But I'm going to take the Chiefs minus 1.5. I'm just not sure they're able to exercise those demons just yet.
It's going to be an awesome weekend of football. So Logan's got Tennessee minus 3.5, San Fran plus 6, Tampa minus 2.5, and Kansas City minus 1.5. I've got Tennessee minus 3.5 as well. We're opposite the rest of the way. Green Bay minus 6, and then I've got both road teams on Sunday. The LA Rams plus 2.5, and the Buffalo Bills plus 1.5. We'll recap it all and look back on divisional weekend on Monday's edition of The Big Show. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nault, live from the Iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio today. Currently hiring in Calgary and across Alberta with competitive wages, extended benefits. Visit iconicec.ca/careers. Take a break. Come back with the biggest news items of the day. Headlines kicks off hour 3 on The Big Show next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.